I've got a very interesting title, as Paul has said. It's all about relationships and family, and I wondered why he asked me. Did he think the days must be harmony, sweetness and light, or I bet they have some real humdingers at the days and they'll have some observations? But probably our Christmas is like everybody's, and already we have heard a couple of things. We face similar things at Christmas, don't we? And what I'd like to do today is just highlight some of the pressure points, give some tips or observations, and then just mention a couple of Bible verses that I think can help us in a very, very practical way. The sad thing about Christmas is that apparently the first working Monday after Christmas is called in some circles Divorce Day, because there are twice as many divorces in January as any other month of the year. And that, according to something I read, has been put down to the stress of family gatherings. I mean, some families don't have turkey for Christmas. It says, unwise candor encouraged by alcohol. Fallout after office parties. I can assure you, Thornbury Baptist office party will be sound. And people keeping together for family's sake. And sometimes Christmas, the time where we should be celebrating a time of joy and peace, it becomes this boiling pot. And there are some pressure points. If I mention my children today, I know some of you know them. These are my imaginary children. So if any of you go to my daughter and said, your dad say this, I will deny it. And I will tell them that you were asleep when I was talking. Now, one of our children, a daughter, she has unrealistic expectations of Christmas. If she hasn't watched Elf by October, she starts to panic. And if we don't want to watch Elf in October or November, we're Scrooge. And sadly, some people have such expectations of Christmas and such a build-up that sometimes the actual day can be an anticlimax. And if we carry those unrealistic expectations and don't realise that sometimes the build-up can be more as enjoyable as the actual day. Because what I think you're doing here, and I'm sorry I'm not going to be here when there's four candles, but what you're doing, you're building up. You're painting the big picture. And so something of the enjoyment and the meaning and reality of Christmas will touch us before the actual day. But some people, they do have unrealistic expectations. For some people, and it's often the mothers, generally the mothers, the workload at Christmas is great. And everybody sits down wanting everything to be right, and perhaps the mum sits down exhausted. And there only has to be a lack of appreciation or lack of understanding, and it doesn't always help. So for some, Christmas is a time where they can just enjoy it all, but for some, it's hard work. For some, we worry about the financial cost. Now, I've got this thing that my family mock me about. I save every pound coin I can over the year. And I'll do all sorts of weird things to get pound coins. And so I end up with this stash, and that's our Christmas money. Some of my family have been known to steal them. But it's expensive. And sometimes you think, well, you know, this is a lot of money. Is it worth it? Or almost a feeling of guilt if you don't buy all that you can and the best that you can. Another pressure point is we can spend a lot of time at Christmas just doing indulgent things that aren't productive. And sometimes just the heaviness of that, you know, by Boxing Day we're all stuffed and, you know, and that can be a pressure. Another pressure can be some people are introverts and some people are extroverts. Now again, hypothetically, just say for example you had two pastors in the church here. And one was an introvert, and the classic definition of an introvert is someone who re-energizes just by being on their own. And the other is an extrovert who, simplistic definition, they energize by being with others. Now, what will make a good Christmas for one is very different for the other. I think David Lawrence has just hived off this morning. He'll pretend he's preaching somewhere, but he's probably gone to a cave. You know, because Dave, on his own admittance, he's an introvert. And how they enjoy Christmas. So when Helen was saying that she would just go off with your father-in-law, was it? Your dad. You know, for some people, that is important at Christmas. And if in a marriage, one partner is an introvert, one is an extrovert, one is delighted when friends call unexpectedly, and the other isn't. And those can be tension points. I'm just highlighting some of the tension points without trying to answer them at this point. What happens as well is many generations come together with very different tolerance levels and expectations of what you've got to do on Christmas. So older generations, Christmas isn't Christmas without the Queen's speech. And in the old days when there was only two channels, you know, everybody watched the Queen's speech, and that for some was Christmas. So they suddenly feel threatened and disturbed when, you know, nobody else wants to watch the Queen's speech. But it's different generations coming together. I think another tension is, I think for many Christians, they have to fight off guilt at Christmas. Because there's an indulgent side of Christmas. And sometimes as Christians you think, gosh, should we just be doing this indulgent thing? You know, we're supposed to be remembering Jesus and it's all this celebration, but it's not really Jesus focused. And you can get the extremes of some Christians who no longer celebrate Christmas to some who say, well, basically Christmas was a pagan festival that the Celts wanted to redeem culture, and so they made it a Christian celebration. But sometimes Christians aren't sure how to be at Christmas. And sometimes that guilt is exacerbated by the fact we're very conscious that what we take for granted, enjoy and indulge in at Christmas, there are many Christians, and we've already thought about Syrian Christians, who just cannot embrace that. And it's very difficult to hold in tension. How do we respond? Because guilt isn't something we should carry, but there needs to be a concern. Just on that, this is a bit of an aside, but maybe many of you saw on Points West and some of the local news that the man who owns Whale Wharf, do you know Whale Wharf down near Littleton? He's got a real vision to make that into a reception centre for migrants. Now, he's a friend of Andy and Caroline's and mine. His name's Charlie. He's a Christian man, really feels God is giving him this opportunity. And there's a lot of discussion. Not everybody thinks it's wonderful. Some think it could be. But he's really praying that that facility he's got could be used as a migrant centre that would house, that would educate, that would health, etc. Just a few miles from here. Now, there's a lot of discussion, a lot of battles, a lot of interest in that. But maybe if you're the sort who starts to feel a bit guilty about Christmas, you know, when there's so many Christians really struggling around the world and so many refugees, etc., maybe just over this Christmas, just pray that, Lord, if that is right, if that really is from you, which I know Charlie feels it is, could this be something that we could be praying for and maybe even getting involved in? But sometimes we struggle with guilt, and that happens. So, and also, I think a pressure point is Christmas is a time when people generally look back and not look forward. And sometimes with the looking back, there is the nostalgia, there's the hurt. So just imagine who'll be sitting around your table eating turkey. Now, around our table, we'll have most of our family with us. And we're probably not an untypical family. Not all of them will be there, which is a sadness. So as we celebrate, there's a tinge of sadness. Our son-in-law, his family live in New Zealand. He's conscious of his family 12,000 miles away. His dad is very ill. So as we celebrate, that's at the back of his mind. Our daughter-in-law recently lost her dad very suddenly. And so for her and her mum, it's their first Christmas. So there's these sort of dynamics going on. And sometimes if we're not sensitive to those, we can end up overriding someone's feelings. Because not everybody, because of the journey that they've been through over the past year, will want to play charades on Christmas night. And sometimes we just need to be sensitive to that. And so how do we enjoy things when we know we're with family who may be carrying heartaches? You know, we think of Mel and the family and Andy. You know, let's be conscious of these people. And if we have unrealistic expectations of Christmas, then sometimes there'll be those that we'll be sharing Christmas with who can't be there with us with those expectations. So these are tension points that are very real. Tips to help. When you're kindly invited to speak here, you're given some thoughts and themes. And part of the thought for today was, what advice does the Bible give about responding positively to the awkward person at the office party? Now, what I know about Jesus, he wasn't a party pooper. You know, sometimes as Christians, we go to these parties and we've got to take our stand. Jesus kept a party going. It had run out of wine. So Jesus wasn't there to clamp down on parties. In fact, those who wanted to criticize Jesus, they said he goes to too many parties. So the party in itself is not wrong. But what Jesus was, he was just himself. And if you've got the office party, the work to do that you dread, all you can do is be yourself. Don't try to be something you're not. Don't try to pretend. And it can be difficult. You know, when someone says a rude joke and it's really funny, and it does happen sometimes, doesn't it? You sit there thinking, what do I do? You know, I can't smile. Well, Jesus was just himself. And being ourselves at Christmas is so important. I think another tip to help us cope is one of the difficulties, I think, is so much is orientated around children at Christmas, which is right. So children, it's for them, but it's not about them. And I think that's quite a subtle difference. Because we end up with this competitive thing about how much we spend on our children, what our children want, what our children need. When I was a kid, I had a Muffin the Mule puppet, you know, sort of thing. And Star Wars comes out just before Christmas, so we know what they want. And sometimes that can be quite a difficulty because we feel we've got to keep the kids happy. And yet it's our relationships and it's our love and it's our being ourselves with them that will keep them happier than what we give them. Young people, when young people go home for Christmas, somehow, and it might be just our family, but they revert to being teenagers. And Ree said to our imaginary daughter, who none of you know, when you come home, you revert to being a teenager. And she said, Mum, I can't help it. And sometimes that brings tension, especially if there's one person in the family doing most of the work for Christmas. So my plea is, if you're a young person, and at my age, most of you, if you go home, don't revert to being a teenager. And what makes it a bit more complicated then, if as a young person, you go home with your new husband or wife? Now, the first tension there is, whose home do they go to? And that can be quite a heartache for some. I know we've got several here who've got children who've recently been married, and you think, but they went to them last year. They had 4 days with them last year. They're only having 3 with us this year. And I can relate to the sort of thing that Helen was saying. I know Ree and I found when we went to her place or to my mum's place, you know, it's very easy for the partner of the one whose home it is to feel an appendage. And we sit down and say, well, Ree's coming home as your daughter, but she's coming home to your home as my wife. And some of those things can cause tension, because if one partner feels a bit of an appendage at Christmas, it doesn't help. And they just retreat. When Helen was saying about, you know, her mother-in-law not speaking to her, when I first started to go out with Ree and went to her home, her mum wasn't quite sure how to treat me or speak to me. And we did work it out, but we sit at the table and she'd say to Ree, in a Welsh accent, "Does he want potatoes?" And I'd say, "Tell her he does." But sometimes it's those sort of pressures that we have to work through. Because if someone feels an appendage, if you're going home to your in-laws for the first time and you haven't yet learned how to relate to them as their pride and joy's spouse, if you feel an appendage, you pick up that atmosphere. And it doesn't help. So, young people, don't go home and revert to be teenagers. And if you're married, if you're the parent of those who've recently been married, don't fight, don't get hurt, because sometimes they have to play family politics too. But these things can cause tension. "Oh, are you willing to come to us on Boxing Day, are you?" And another tip is, if you can't watch Downton Abbey on Christmas Day, it's not the end of the world. You can record things. Accept, to another tip is, for older people, there's often a poignancy about Christmas that if you're younger, you can't quite relate to. Because an older generation will look back with sometimes sad memories, sometimes conscious of those who are not there. And so everybody processes Christmas. For the young kids, it's, you know, great joy and adventure, and it's all happening. For older folk, it's poignant. And sometimes we just need to be aware of that. And I think what Helen said about, you know, she just realised her mother-in-law did this every day. It put a different perspective on things. And I'd also say another tip is, find the grace to realise that people might find you as difficult as you find them. In fact, I said to all of our kids, "What is the one problem about Christmas that you find?" And they all said, "You, Dad." But you know, that we've all got different personalities, different styles, different dynamics, and sometimes we've just got to find grace over a few days to say, I've got my quirks. I like to hive off on my own. I want everybody to do the quiz, and not everybody wants to. Or, no, we want dinner, then the Queen's speech, then pudding. You know, these little things, they're not worth falling out over. But there's some things, one of the great things about the Bible is it can be very simple and very practical. I like that right at the end of the Old Testament in Malachi, it says that God's heart is to turn the heart of parents to children and children to parents. And what can happen? Yeah, the statistics say that Christmas can be a disruptive time. God's heart is that Christmas is a healing time. And maybe this Christmas, some of us who've had dysfunctional relationships with family, with parents, God's heart is to turn your heart to them and their heart to you. And go into Christmas looking for those opportunities. Yeah, it's always difficult when we get together because my dad insists on having his own way. Well, go in this Christmas saying, "God, you want to turn the hearts of parents to children." And interestingly enough, right early in the Gospels, in Luke, the same verse is there. God's heart is about reuniting and reconnecting family. And because of the pressures of the world and for all 1,001 reasons, Christmas can be a destructive time for some families. But God's heart is a time of healing. And as we go into Christmas, just think, well, are there people in my family who I just need to change my attitude? In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26, Paul says, "Don't let the sun go down on your anger. Don't give the enemy that sort of foothold." And one thing at Christmas, which if you're in the midst of some family dynamics that are difficult, don't go to bed angry. And that doesn't mean to say you've got to have a sort out with everybody in the family before you go to bed. You've just got to deal with it yourself. And you've got to be able to say, "God, I forgive them. I don't have to raise all the issues with all my family, but I'm not going to go to bed until I know I've sorted that out." Because if we go to bed angry, that anger festers. And we don't wake up free of it. And sometimes because of what we've eaten or drunk or just we've slobbed for a few days, it's very hard to take control of our spirits, you know, or guard our spirits. And Paul says, don't go to bed angry. It's not worth it. It gives the enemy that foothold and the anger grows. And my simple advice would be, if you're in a family situation this Christmas that is tense, say, God, I'm not going to go to bed until I've sorted it out with you and forgiven them. Occasionally it might mean you've got to talk to them, but no, it's my problem. If I'm angry with you, it's my problem. Whatever you've done, or whatever I think or perceive you've done, if I'm angry with you, it's my problem. If I can't forgive you, it's my problem. And so we need to sort out what we can. And then in Philippians 4 verse 8, it says this. It says, fix your thoughts on what is true, honourable, right and pure, lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Keep putting into practice all you've learnt and received from me, everything you've heard from me and seen me doing, then the God of peace will be with you. And Paul's just saying, look, if there's anything good, anything worthy of praise, you dwell on that. You see, if we've had a disastrous Christmas, we tend to dwell on what went wrong. And I know several years ago, and I might have said this story before, Ray and I were talking with a couple who weren't going to wait till Divorce Monday. Things weren't good. And they were saying, you know, the problems with each other. And we just stopped them and said to her, can you think of one good thing about your husband? And she said, yeah, he's great with the kids. And she listed a few things. And we said, well, why don't we thank God for that? And we asked him. And he raked his memory. And but what happened was, instead of seeing what was wrong, instead of seeing the fault, instead of seeing the heartache, they said, yeah, I'm thankful for that. And Christmas is a time of thanksgiving. One thing that the Americans do really well is that they have Thanksgiving Day, where they have a day where they're just thankful for things. It is spoilt a bit because the next day they have Black Friday, where they trample on each other to get what they haven't got. But, you know, but they have a day where they say, let's just be thankful. And you can't hold resentment and thanks. You can't thank God for somebody and resent them. You can't do it. And if there is someone in your family, and I think Helen, you know, just described this, there was an issue with her mother-in-law that she was struggling with, and one day she realized, yeah, it's because of this. And her whole attitude changed. She stopped being a victim, and she started to appreciate. And if you've got family members who you don't appreciate, you're not a victim. Don't make their problem your problem. If I choose to be a victim, your problem has become my problem. And I've only got grace to deal with my problems. I haven't got grace to deal with your problems. And Paul says, look, if there's anything, anything that's worth being thankful for, think on these things. And so that family member you struggle with, just find some good things to thank them for. Because Christmas, it's either a time of pressure, and pressure is a good and a bad thing. In Psalm 4, verse 2, the Moffat translation, it says, in pressure you enlarged me. And there will be pressures at Christmas, but if we've got a Christ-like response, or try to be thankful, try to not hold resentment, deal with our own issues, then that pressure will enlarge us. But we all know that if we live under pressure too long, without any outlets, that becomes stress and strain and breakdown. And you might find some pressures at Christmas, but there's some pressures that enlarge and there's some breakdown. My response will determine whether it's a pressure that it enlarges. Lord, may we have great Christmases. We thank you that in the build-up we can be thankful for what Christmas is all about. And Lord, I know for every one of us here there'll be so many different dynamics and poignancies and heartaches and blessings that we'll be thinking about over the Christmas few days. But Lord, I thank you that your heart is to turn parents to children. And Lord, if there's any of us here who need your help for that to happen, may this Christmas be a step forward so that something of your love and something of what Christmas is all about, joy and hope and peace and goodwill, will come. In Jesus' name. Amen.